Howdy! Welcome to the Common Geeking Program. Right now we are in our break episodes. We will be back shortly, but for now, let me introduce myself. I'm Taimal Chowdhury, or Chowder, whichever you prefer. And my lovely guest, other guy, not guest, but other guy.
Guest, other guy. Lovely. I'm Jeff. Yes. Yeah, I'm a part of this podcast. What are we talking about today, Chowder?
We'll be talking about Pokemon, Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon.
Just doing a little follow-up on something that we talked briefly about before.
Yeah.
It's been a little bit... We've had a bit more chance to kind of play the game since we talked about it in episode, 48? That was episode 48, right?
Yes. Yes, 48.
That was the news episode that I briefly talked about it.
All right, so let's dive right in. Let's just get right down to it. What did you think of Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon?
So, last time I talked about it, right, I was saying, like, oh, yeah, it's pretty much the same as Sun and Moon, and there were, like, a few differences. And Sun and Moon were kind of mediocre games, I think. Would you agree with that in terms of the Pokemon games?
I wouldn't say mediocre. I'd say average, but yeah, didn't blow my mind.
They weren't mind-blowing, yeah. But after actually playing the rest of Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, I think this might be up there as, like, one of my favorite Pokemon games.
Huh, really?
I don't know if it quite gets... Like, I think if I had to pick an order, I'd say I like ORAS, then HeartGold, SoulSilver, and then Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon. It seemed like it was just going to be very similar to Sun and Moon, which it definitely was.
Yeah, but like, there's like a certain part where the whole thing just splits off from Sun and Moon. It's like...
Yeah, well, okay, story-wise, yeah, I mean, I always liked the story in Sun and Moon. I thought that there were a lot of fun things there. The problem that I had in Sun and Moon is that it was so fucking easy.
Yeah.
But this game is, like, actually the first legitimate challenge that I've had in Pokemon for, like, a long-ass time. Because, like, they like, buffed the shit out of a bunch of the trial Totem Pokemon, yeah, which are, like, the equivalent of the gyms in the Alola region of Pokemon Sun and Moon. And Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, and like, yeah, the new Totem Pokemon are like, actually a lot of them I had some real problems with.
Totem Araquanid was kicking my ass, man.
Yeah, which was really kind of refreshing, because usually the Pokemon games, right, you kind of have to you have to give yourself handicaps to sort of, or to kind of like actually make it challenging, because, you know, the game is for kids.
Yeah, going down the list of handicaps I've had to put on myself are setting the game to set instead of active, so I can't like switch out.
Yeah, I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah, trying to not use revives, but the biggest...
Don't turn on the XP share.
Sometimes I'd even just go with a Nuzlocke challenge, where like, if a Pokemon faints, you treat it as dead. It's gone.
Yeah, that's pretty much why I think that fans of the game created stuff like the Nuzlocke challenges, because usually Pokemon games are not very difficult.
No.
And for those of you uninitiated, the Nuzlocke challenge, basically, you have to catch the first Pokemon you meet in every region, but those are the only Pokemon you can catch, so basically it gives your team kind of like a random aspect to it.
Yeah.
And like Chowder just said, if a Pokemon faints in battle, you can't revive it. You just have to treat it as if it's dead. You know, it creates these difficult situations where you have to, like, get your Pokemon kind of higher level. And then people, like, write a lot of cool stories about it, too, since, you know, you kind of get more of a bond with your Pokemon when you're really afraid for their fucking lives. So it's kind of a fun thing, but yeah. Don't know, man. Doing a fucking Nuzlocke in this game would have been
brutal.
Really frustrating. Yeah. Everyone would die.
The whole story ends with a fucking water spider.
Yeah, seriously though. Yeah, what is that, the third trial, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or is it the second trial?
No, it's definitely the...
No, I think it is the second trial, because you fight the normal trial, right?
Trial.
And then you go fight, and then you fight Hala.
Right.
And then I think your next thing is going to the other island and doing the water trial, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so...
Yeah, yeah, water trial, then fire trial, like, then grass trial, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the second trial in the game, if you don't count the island Kahuna. Which there's one of in each island. And it was really difficult. I as is the case with every Pokemon game, it kind of depends on what your team composition is. Like, yep. I didn't have that much trouble with the fire one, because I had a Mudsdale on my team, which was a really strong ground type. I guess it probably wasn't a Mudsdale at that point, though. It was probably still a Mudbray. And Austin was saying he didn't really have a trouble with the grass trial. But the grass trial, I think, may have given me more issue than the water trial.
Yeah, same.
Which was weird because I picked the fire starter.
Yeah, had to get that fucking Laurent just to waste all of its, like, recovery
synthesis.
Moves.
Yeah. Yeah, so, like, a lot of the things that I found really great about this game is that, like I said earlier, the gym battles, basically, for this are, like, you have to fight these totem Pokemon, which are just, like, larger versions of Pokemon that are, like, have some buffs in their stats, and they also will call for help and bring in, like, an ally Pokemon that you also have to fight. But something that they didn't really do in Sun and Moon, which they implemented in Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, is that the combinations of the totem Pokemon that you were fighting and the ally Pokemon had some pretty good, like, synergy in terms of abilities and moves and stuff. For example, the grass trial, right? The totem Lurantis has a move that requires that it charges up unless there's sunlight on the field, which is like a weather condition. And its ally Pokemon was a Kecleon, and one of Kecleon's moves is Sunny Day. And then also the Lurantis knows Synthesis, which is a healing move, which heals you more if it's in the sunlight. So it was just like a back and forth like combination there.
Yeah, and that plus all its like stat boosts made it able to like tank hits even from like its weaknesses, which is
crazy because in the sun fire moves are more powerful. You'd think that like, oh, this grass type Pokemon getting hit by boosted fire moves, it would be not too big a
nope, takes it on the goddamn chin.
I was using fucking my Torracat's fire Z move on it and it did like half, and I was like, oh boy, we're gonna have to rethink our strategy here a little bit.
Yeah, same. Like I had someone try to use their a Z move off of a flame charge. Nothing.
Yeah, I think mine was off of Fire Fang, which is a little bit stronger. But what I ended up doing was I had an Ekans on my team, which knew it had the ability Intimidate. And what Intimidate does is when you switch it into battle, it lowers the person you're attacking's attack stat. So this Lurantis was using physical attacking moves. So what I would do was I would start off with my Ekans. It would lower its attack once, and then I would switch out my Ekans for something else to just die, because it was still hella powerful, and then I'd switch back in my Ekans, and then switch out again, and switch back in my Ekans, so it ended up having, like, a minus, like, 6 in attack, and it was still hitting, like, pretty decently well, and then that ended up also kind of biting me on the ass a little bit, too, because the Kecleon knew Ancient Power, which is a special move, and every once in a while, Ancient Power, like, gives you a boost to all of your stats, so I had to be kind of lucky there.
What I basically did, and it's kind of a long explanation, but I'll shorten it to I used two cannons blast to like give him a burn and just like stalled him out using Roost. So every time he used Synthesis, I used Roost, and like every time he tried to lower my speed with Low Sweep, I would use Flame Charge, bring my speed back up. It was ridiculous.
That's great. But yeah, I mean, Other than those specific examples, like, honestly, the story is not too much of a departure from Sun and Moon, but the thing about Sun and Moon was, like, I forgot how much I enjoyed the story and the characters in Sun and Moon, because,
I mean,
gameplay itself was kind of mediocre.
Yeah, real quick before I move on from that subject, but, like, the interesting thing I found about the totem Pokemon were that they felt more like a puzzle to be solved than, like, boss fight.
Or, like, yeah, more like a puzzly boss fight, but like you're right, it definitely felt
like you're trying to find a solution to a problem rather than like trying to beat some dude with a fuck ton of HP or whatever.
Yeah, no, I definitely had to like rethink what was on my team and what could take a single hit, and then what could, you know,
yeah, and what could,
so
like,
it's definitely, yeah,
decreases stats and whatever. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Right. And like I remember the first time I was fighting their Araquanid, right, I was just like, okay, boom, it's a bug type, so I don't want to use a grass type on it, but it's also a water type, so what do I hit it with? I'll hit it with electric type moves, right? So I had an Ampharos, and I brought out, well, I don't know if it was an Ampharos at that point, it was probably a Flaffy, but, and I brought out the Flaffy, and then it's got a fucking berry that reduces the power of electric type moves, and I'm like, you son of a bitch! Like,
dick move!
Yeah. I forgot how much I enjoyed all the characters and a lot of the story stuff in Sun and Moon. Because
especially your boy Guzma.
Yeah, your boy Guzma. One of my favorite characters in all of Pokemon. He's so cool. He's just a really funny guy. But like the kind of mediocre, in my opinion, gameplay in Sun and Moon kind of overshadowed that for me. So having the gameplay brought up to be, you know, nice and more impressive made me appreciate the story that much more too. And they also the post game stuff with Team Rainbow Rocket was pretty cool and pretty nostalgic.
Yeah, it was pretty enjoyable. I mean, I feel like it dragged on a little bit too long because like every
I thought that I wanted more of it. Honestly,
it's like it got a little repetitive after a while. You know, like I was getting into a fight with every goddamn grunt in the castle, and like, come on. I have beaten 20 Rattatas at this point.
I liked the fact that in each room there was a puzzle or something.
Yeah, no, you know, puzzles could be enjoyable, but like,
because that brought it back to like the old days of Pokemon. Because like we really haven't been getting that many puzzles in Pokemon,
or like, or even when we get puzzles, they're pretty basic, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. I enjoyed the puzzles. I guess my one complaint about it is I was kind of not a fan of the fact that it was like, oh, just go fight a bunch of dudes, and then it's like, oh, fight another dude, fight the powerful dude, fight another powerful dude, and then you're done.
Yeah, that's
so. That's why I wanted more like, I don't know. I was thinking there'd be more like actual plot line to it, but it was pretty much like, hey, they're here, they're trying to take over, go fight them all, beat them.
Yeah,
you know. Like, and then it was like the kind of guy that they set up Giovanni to be, right? He's just like, ah, yes, I've spent years of my life orchestrating this thing, and then you beat him, and he's just like, ah, you silly kid, I guess I'll just get out of your hair. And I'm like, what do you know? I mean, I know it's kind of like that in all the games, but. He didn't really act defeated. He was just like, ah, yes, a minor setback, even though this is my entire plan, and just leaves. And I'm like, okay, whatever, Giovanni.
He is interdimensional. He's probably just got, like, other dimensions he's conquered, and it's like, I'll just go back there. I don't know. I expected kind of two things. Like, the first thing, I don't know, maybe I was misreading those trailers, but, like, I thought, like, Team Rainbow Rocket was going to be, like, in some way connected to the
main plot.
Ultra Megapolis. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was kind of a disappointment. Ultra Megalopolis.
Oh, yeah. That was.
They, like, hyped. It was sort of the equivalent of how Ultra Space was in Sun and Moon, though, you know? Yeah. Because they hyped the shit out of it. They're like, oh, look at this cool place. It's Ultra Megalopolis. Look at this main cityscape. And you're like, oh, shit. That's the main city. What else is there? It's just that. Yeah. And there's nothing there. Like, it's just, like, basically a pretty-looking hallway.
It's just a set piece for, like, the fight against Necrozma, which was pretty freaking epic. But, like, once that's done, it's, like, there's nothing else there. And it's, like, I wish I could have explored more and seen more and maybe get to talk to some of the people there. But no.
Well, there is, like, there's one bit of interaction that you can do. Well, sort of interaction. One of the buildings on the side, there's, like, a doorway. And if you go up to the doorway, it says you can, like, see faded figures on the other side.
Yeah.
So before you defeat Necrozma, it's like, you walk up to that doorway and you click on it, and it's just like, oh, you can see some faded figures behind the glass. They seem to be cowering in fear, right? And then after you defeat Necrozma, you go up to it and it's like, oh, you see some faded figures behind the glass. They seem to be partying. So that's one thing, but yeah.
That's your world building right there.
Yeah, seriously, though. Although, if we want, I feel like I want to talk about the addition of the Ultra Wormhole feature.
Yeah.
Because that's a lot of fun, honestly.
I don't know. Like, I thought, like, hopping through the wormhole and just flying through that every time would get annoying. But no, there's something enjoyable about it. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, it was kind of enjoyable. It was, like, it definitely was really frustrating. But, yeah, but I don't know. It was only getting there, you know? Yeah. It was, like, it was frustrating, but just kind of game-level frustrating. Nothing too terrible.
Yeah, nothing that would make you, like, throw your 3DS against a wall or whatever.
Yeah. This new feature, right, where you could go through these, like, interdimensional wormholes, and it would be this little mini game where you have to, like, fly around and get these energy balls to go faster, right? And you're basically, it's trying to drag you into portals, but you want to not go into the portals because the longer you go in the Ultra Wormhole, the more likely you'll be to encounter a wormhole that has, like, a legendary Pokemon in it. right? So basically the goal is to last as long as possible without getting dragged into one of those wormholes, so that when you do, it's a higher chance of you encountering a legendary Pokemon. And it had something like, geez, it must have been like 20 different legendary Pokemon from previous games, right?
Yeah.
And that you could encounter?
Something like that. And that's not even including the Ultra Beast, right? Like,
yo, that was cool.
Yeah.
So usually it's just like this little empty, like there was these four different areas, like a water area and a grass area and a mountain area, right? They'd all be the same no matter what you found there. But there were these white wormholes that when you go into them, you'd find these Ultra Beasts. Ultra Beasts were a thing that were added in Sun and Moon. So there's like 8 different Ultra Beasts, and each of them have their own individualized world, which was really cool. For example, one of my favorite ones...
I know which one you're talking about.
I think Shadow knows where I'm going. So there's this Pokemon called Buzzswole, right? He's like this huge buff mosquito. He's Buzz Swole, you know, he's swole. He's like a big strong man and he's a mosquito, right? And when you find his world, it's like, oh, it's this jungle, right? And you're like walking on the tops of these trees, but all of the trees you realize are shaped like buff strong men. Like they're all shaped like they've got big fucking abs and pecs, and they're like doing muscle poses with their arms.
And you're like walking along them, and it's great. And when you like finally fight Buzzwall, he has the best entrance out of all of them. He like erupts from a fucking
volcano, right?
Yeah, he erupts from a fucking volcano and just lands on the tree you're on.
It's so
flexing
good.
Flexing and everything.
Have you found all of them yet?
Not all the Ultra Beasts, no. It's
which ones haven't you found?
I have not gotten Guzzlord.
I really like Guzzlord plural.
Oh, I haven't seen that one yet.
I won't spoil it for you, but I think that one has the most interactivity.
Then there's Faramosa. Haven't been to that one. Well, oh wait, is that exclusive?
Faramosa and Celesteela are exclusive to Moon.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I looked up those ones, but we can't get them because we both have Ultra Sun.
Yeah.
And then Kartana and Buzzwole are exclusive to Sun.
I got Kartana. You know, it was kind of neat fighting those dudes, but...
So it was kind of disappointing because I knew that you would see dudes there because I saw it in the thumbnail of a YouTube video before that.
Yeah.
But it was still cool. I liked how they all had their own different spin on them. It's sort of like, oh, they didn't really have any hard set rules for what each of these worlds were going to be, you know? Like, some of them involve, like, oh, there's people and some of them don't. Like, there's a dude in Guzzlord's world as well. But yeah, so I don't know. It was cool to, like, explore and, like, find these, like, alien sort of worlds. It was very, I don't know. It was a nice, like, I wish there was a bit more to it. I do. But, like, I think it would be cooler if they had made more of the significant plot about doing that, you know?
Getting through the game, I enjoyed it, but like I just can't help but get the feeling that there needs to be a real change up to the Pokemon formula, like a genuine like change up, because some people are complaining that it's feeling stagnant, and it's hard to argue that it's not getting a little stale, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Or at least bring some new elements, you know? Because, like, that was something that Sun and Moon were really exciting for to begin with, is because they're adding all this new shit that we would have previously thought was totally unprecedented. Like, the Alolan form Pokemon, the Ultra Beasts, yep. The Totem Pokemon, and the Trials. Like, that was all shit that we're like, wow, Pokemon's never done shit like that before. And then it wound up being actually a lot more similar to things that had came before.
Yeah.
You know? Like, the Ultra Beasts are like they're Ultra Beasts, but they're basically just like they're just Pokemon that kind of look weird.
Mechanically, they behave exactly the same as Pokemon, so yeah, might as well just be Pokemon.
And then the other thing that was new that Sun and Moon added is that they had evolving legendaries, like legendaries that could evolve, which I really don't like. I'm not a fan of that because you can only, since you can't breed legendaries, it basically means like you have to kind of pick which one you're going to be getting, you know? If I want to have some of these pre-evolutions of the legendaries to just use for shits and giggles and more fun competitive play, right? Then I have to basically actually sacrifice an actually useful Pokemon that I could be getting instead, you know? Like, I never thought about the fact before that, like, oh, no, the legendaries evolve, right? And I never, if someone had said, like, evolving legendaries, I would have been like, yeah, sure, why not, right? But now I know why not.
Alright, what else is there to talk about? Expect any changes to the meta?
Well, some of the new Pokemon are pretty good. The new Ultra Beasts that were added.
Yeah.
Naganadel is really good. That's the evolution of Poipol, which is the Pokemon we talked about before. Fucking, I love Poipol.
Poipol's great.
I kind of wish that Poipol was not a pre-evolution. Like, this is another thing. It's like, we saw Poipol, right? And I'm like, oh, I hope that doesn't evolve, because I wanted it to be good on its own right. But it's, you know, since it's a pre-evolution Pokemon, it's not that great. But Naganadel is pretty good. Stakataka is really good. All three of them are really good.
Blacephalon. It's got a weird name. Yeah, Blacephalon's pretty good, especially its attack, its signature move, Mind Blown, which is like this crazy powerful fire type move.
It's basically like Explosion, except you get to use it twice.
Exactly.
So it cuts half of your maximum HP, and it's like 200.
You'd think like making its head explode would take out all of its HP, but no, just half.
Nah, it just gets another head. Like, it's fine. It's a Blacephalon. That's another thing, is like, I kind of wish that you could encounter a world for Blacephalon and Stakataka the way you could for all the other Ultra Beasts. Because it makes me want that.
Like, Sakataka's world is just the Lego movie. Just the Lego movie.
Okay, you and Austin keep saying Sakataka is made out of Legos. It's made out of fucking bricks, dude. The brick came before the Lego. Like, it's gray. It's made out of bricks. Like, it doesn't have any fucking Lego studs. They're just bricks. Like,
then there's Ultra Necrozmar.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
That thing is a fucking monster.
Yeah, that was a disgusting boss battle.
He was one-shotting like some like level 70 level, even like some level 100 Pokemon. Granted, those level 100 Pokemon didn't have good defense, but still, one-shotting, and it's terrifying.
Man, I was really happy that thing didn't have a fucking recovery move.
Right. But even in the meta, that thing is going to be terrifying. It's got like, it's got amazing attacks, it's got crazy speed. It's basically a mega evolution with a Z move, and that's ridiculous. And like Photon Geyser, that is a weird but really good attack.
Yeah, weird. Yeah. That thing is, yeah. That fight kind of irritated me, though, because previously a lot of my Pokemon were underleveled, right? Because I enjoyed having the challenge and I was still able to beat things while being underleveled, right? Yeah. But then when I fought that, like, that thing was like 10 levels higher than the last thing I fought. So I had to like grind a bunch to get to a point where I could actually beat it. And then after that, everything after that was just easy again, like a normal Pokemon game. And I was like, well, god damn it, you know? It was kind of sad that I didn't get to, I don't know, I felt like I had a little bit less enjoyment of the game after that fact. I mean, it was still good. Like, the Ribombi actually gave me trouble the first time I fought it.
Yeah, same. Like, after the first boss, I'm like, I don't feel like this, and I just used a Lycanium Z on it.
Oh, nice.
It's one of the relatively easier trial Pokemon, but
it was still fun.
But, like, the part leading up to it was pretty fun, like, fighting all the trial captains.
We're going and fighting. Yeah, that was cool. That's fun game. Like, they added a feature where you can so usually to get moves and stuff in the post game, you have to get these things called BP, battle points, or in this case beach points, which usually you have to do like a bunch of battling and some post game thing for. It's kind of tedious, which they still have that in this, but they also added an extra thing where you can do this little surfing mini game to get those points instead. And I really enjoy doing the Mantine surfing. I got to like 66,000. Once you get the hang, yeah, I know. Usually I was like, oh, if I burk 20, then I was happy. And then I did that one. It did, like, you can get more depending on which route you do too.
Right, some of them are
because
longer.
I think that the best one is the one between Ulaula and Pony Island.
So one thing I was saddened by is that still no battle frontier. Like, it's still the battle tree, and like,
yo, and fucking still no fucking national Pokedex.
Yeah, like,
That made me really sad.
Yeah, like, the battle tree just is super boring. You just, like, keep fighting the same, like, string of trainers over and over, and it's just boring. I use...
Well, you can do the battle agency, which is kind of like the battle frontier.
Yeah, it's kind of like one of the battle frontiers, and it's something, but, like, there are times where it's completely luck-based. Like, sometimes it doesn't give you a Pokemon that you can use, and sometimes you have a great Pokemon. Unfortunately, the random, like, trainers it'll pair you up with if you don't have, like, if you haven't street passed with anyone is choose completely stupid Pokemon to, like...
I haven't done much of that at all. Do you get BP for doing that at all?
No. What you get, though, are rare candies and bottle caps.
Oh, you can get bottle caps from doing that?
Yeah, but, like, the bottle caps are a lot more spaced out. Like, those take, like, 10 ranks or every 10 fights you win or something.
Gotcha.
But like, you know, I got,
that's
like...
That's cool, though.
Yeah, so you can get... It's a way to get... It's a reliable way to get, like, rare candy and bottle caps, especially rare candy. Yeah, let's just wrap this up and with just a summary of our thoughts on the game. Jeff?
I think that ultimately Pokemon Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon was a huge improvement onto Sun and Moon and is legitimately, I think, one of the most fun games in the franchise after the fact. It's got a great story. It's got a lot of great new features. It's actually presents some sort of a challenge. And I don't know, it just gave me some pretty good vibes, I think, despite its shortcomings and what it could have done better. Not my favorite, but pretty good.
Yeah, I enjoyed this game. It was fun, and I enjoyed it as much as most of the Pokemon games. But, like, I really hope, like, for whatever the next Pokemon game they're making is for the Switch.
Yeah, the next one comes out for the Switch, yeah, so.
I really hope they do something to, like, make the whole thing fresh again, because, like,
yeah.
I
also hope that that game is either 8th gen or remake of the 4th gen games. Yeah. Like, I don't want another 7th gen game. Like,
well, I doubt they're going to do another 7th gen.
Well, because Colin's right. There was, I'm pretty sure that on, like, some, there's some guy who, like, searches for trademarks that have just been, gotten, like, involving Pokemon. And I think that there was, like, some news a long time ago that the name Pokemon Stars had been taken out,
yeah.
But there hadn't been any
news
about it.
Yeah, but sometimes companies will trademark potential names of things they want.
Yeah, that's true.
So it,
I guess, yeah, but what I'm saying is I hope that it's not Pokemon Stars.
Yeah, fair, know? Same.
Because, like, 5 games in one generation of the same story is really pushing it as far as, like, you know, how much you can get us to buy the same game. We're not fucking Todd Howard up in this bitch.
Yeah, so I think that'll about do it. To all our lovely listeners, you can find us on commongeekingprogram.com. You can find us on SoundCloud. You can find us on Twitter at geekingprogram. And you can also find us on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Stitcher.
All the good stuff.
Yep, we try to, like, sow our seeds into many places.
And I think, I don't know if we're going to keep this in here, but I'll say it. I think that we're going to be returning officially on the 9th of February, it's looking like. But we'll have some other stuff before then.
All right, I think that'll about do it. Ciao.
Sure.
This interlude episode of the Common Geeking Program features Tamil Choudhury and Jeff Levin. The episode discusses Pokemon Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon and is a follow-up to episode 48, Mario Forces and Knuckles. This episode is sponsored by Multiple Takes because I could not find anything about the interlude outros. The podcast is created and produced by Colin Ketchin and Jeff Levin, with the episode edited by me, Tamil Choudhury. Original music by Colin Ketchin. The next episode will air on January 19th, so stay tuned, and thank you for listening to our podcast. Ciao. Howdy. That hurt up.
That's, hi.
I don't know how to start.
No, it's fine.
This.
Keep going. No, I like the intro of this episode being, howdy, and then, like, a couple seconds of pause.
I would hope we cut that out, but...